Good afternoon and welcome to Thursday, February 27th, the podcast now of Guerrilla Radio on CKDU. And we have some surprises in store. We've got a brand new, it's still warm from burning CD, the interview that the doctor had done this week with William Bloom. And we're going to be, of course, talking about this day in history. What else have we got on deck, John?
We're going to talk about what's going on in the Gaza Strip over the last couple weeks. We're going to talk about anti-war demonstrations. We're
going to
talk about Iraq.
I want to talk about the trains in Italy. That's my favorite thing yet.
Yeah, direct action all over the world going on. And we're going to bring it to you here another Thursday, another episode of Guerrilla Radio.
Stay tuned. And of course, this week on Guerrilla Radio, we are going to continue the new, I think it's going to be a new staple of the program. Last week, we had a very positive feedback from a little radio drama that we performed here on air, the doctor and I. So we've got another one set up for this evening, haven't we?
Yeah, we should have told you that in the intro, just in case you didn't get enticed enough to listen to the show. We should have said, tonight, another edition of Radio Drama. Ari Fleischer.
Featuring.
And Russell, this time we don't have any more Helen Thomas. We've got Russell Mockheber.
Just
and,
as good.
It's just as good. Working over Ari Fleischer. And Ari Fleischer, White House spokesman, staying on task.
So I think we're going to get the evening started, as we usually do, with a little bit of this day in history. And this is, of course, the 27th of February. Oh, that's the wrong music. What do you know? I'm playing the wrong music. I'm just going to get the right music, because this day in history is just not the same without the right soundtrack behind there. So talk for 10 seconds, Doctor.
We've got 10 seconds to tell you what else is coming up on the show. We're going to talk today about the weather, and not the weather outside. No, no, no. The weather in Iraq and how that's going to dictate the schedule of war. Do we have the music for this day in history?
We do. We're all set up. Thank you, Johnny. The weather of war. Nice one. Okay, I think I've got the right music. Now, here we go into this day in history, February 27th. On this day in history in 1534, the beginning of Anabaptist New Jerusalem on Earth in Germany. got all started on this day. All Lutherans and Roman Catholics were to be eliminated by driving them out or converting them, so as to create a community bound by love and without sin. Non-belief, or misbelief, was made a capital offense. It resisted besieging armies lasting over a year. In 1557, the first Russian embassy opened in London. In 1670, Jews were expelled from Austria by order of Leopold I. In 1848, following the abdication of Louis-Philippe, a republic was proclaimed in France with poet-diplomat Alphonse de Lamartine as acting head of state. In 1938, Britain and France recognized Franco government in Spain. In 1957, in China, Mao Zedong delivered his speech on the correct handling of contradictions among people. In 1958, the USSR performed a nuclear test. In 1965, France performed an underground nuclear test. In 1969, in the U.S., thousands rampaged through nine University of Wisconsin buildings in Madison over the topic of black enrollment policy. In 1969, this is on the same day, in fact, students at the University of Chicago marched in the streets. In 1970 in the U.S., the New York Times falsely reported that the U.S. Army had ended illegal domestic surveillance. In 1973 in the U.S., 300 Olaga Sioux American Indian Movement, AIM, activists liberated and occupied Wounded Knee, South Dakota, the site of the 1890 terrorist massacre of the Sioux by U.S. cavalry. In response to a campaign of terror by tribal and FBI officials, they demanded an investigation of Indian grievances at the site of the last major massacre of Indians by the whites. In 1974, the U.S. performed a nuclear test. In 1978, France performed a nuclear test. And again in 1982, France performed a nuclear test. This is a very popular day for nuclear tests, I must say. In 1987, in the U.S., the Tower Commission report detailing the Iran-Contra scandal found Ronald Reagan to be confused and uninformed. It faulted White House Chief of Staff Donald Reagan, former National Security Advisor Robert McFarlane, and his successor Admiral John Poindexter and CIA Director William Casey. Casey had resigned on the 2nd of February for health reasons. McFarlane attempted suicide on the 9th of February, and Reagan resigned on the 27th of February. In 1991, Bangladesh elected a new parliament in its first democratic transition of power. And in 1991, this is a good place for the music to stop. In 1991, the Gulf War ended on this day as the Saudi army entered Kuwait City and the Iraqi troops retreated. And Kuwait was liberated. A ceasefire was declared at midnight.
And then a ticker tape parade followed in New York City, which was the most unbelievable thing, considering the war was no such thing. It was a massacre. 348 Americans died, 200 of them killed by their own Americans. 150,000 at least Iraqi soldiers killed, much of them along a strip called the Highway of Death, where retreating Iraqi tanks were bombed silly by American fighter pilots, and then strafed with helicopter and F-16 fire, and then buried alive or dead, depending on how they fared, in massive 70-mile-long trenches. So, and then a ticker tape parade in New York. Unbelievable on this day in history. Also, I noticed there was a couple other things we're going to have on our radio drama. We're going to talk a little bit about Iran-Contra, and we're going to have a couple questions to Ari Fleischer about Elliot Abrams, who is a convicted criminal from that scandal, too, and from his work in Latin America throughout the 1980s with the Reagan regime, which was responsible for the death of 200,000 odd Latin Americans during the 1980s. And although Reagan did resign and all that Iran-Contra stuff was a big scandal, you'll remember that his vice president, George Herbert Walker Bush, was elected president. George Herbert Walker Bush was also the head of the CIA in the first Reagan administration, and vice president in the second Reagan administration, and then elected in 1988. So I'm not so sure that they paid the price. And now, considering Bush is back in power, this being George W. Bush, with basically the same players all in place, you'll notice the exchange that's going on with the United Nations involves John Negroponte, who was also part of that big scandal and the atrocities in Latin America in the 1980s. So it's all the same game going on all the time. but unprecedented opposition, which we're going to talk about later on in the show.
Excellent. Well, before we move on to the ever exciting and ever dramatic radio drama, I just wanted to mention a little close to home the fire on Gottingen Street, which has left people, businesses, and people we know out of homes and out of business, obviously. And the King's News was mentioning it, but I think it needs to get mentioned again because I think the last thing Gottingen Street needs is more ugly faces and burnt buildings. It's the last thing that part of our city needs. So it's really too bad. And I think people that I know that they can ask me for anything they need. But I don't know. I just think it's a terrible thing that happened. And what a bad time. Coldest time of the year. But I'm going to play a lovely song in their honor by Piggy called Gottingen Street. And then we're going to move on to our radio drama, I think. Which we just need a little bit of preparation. So let's just listen to the song.
We'll be right back.
we were just talking about school and too much schoolwork, and we got all caught up there. So that was Cottage and Street from Piggy, sent out to all the people who have had to deal with what's been going on Cottage and Street.
Hit pretty close to home to the Gorilla Squad, so our shout-outs from the Gorilla high top, the Gorilla Media Empire.
The Gorilla Media Center, high atop the Dalhousie sub-building. Time for radio drama.
Woohoo.
I think I'm just going to... Oh, I have to start it. Okay. So do you want to introduce like who and when
this is?
Sure.
This is an exchange between Ari Fleischer, White House spokesman, and Russell Mokieber, who is, among other things, he's an editor of Multinational Monitor. He also the editor of D.C.-based Corporate Crime Reporter. There he focuses essentially on the impact of the mega capitalist, predatory capitalist state. And he decided to exercise his democratic institutions of the United States and ended up testing them and got himself press clearance to ask questions of Ari Fleischer.
Excellent. And, Russell Mokieber will be played by me,
Ainsley.
And Ari Fleischer will be played by
me,
the John. Doctor. The doctor.
Okay, the doctor.
Okay, so. Let it begin.
Radio drama.
Ari, you said the other day that the United States is set in stone against military coups of any kind. And yet, there is a long history of the United States organizing coups against democratically elected leaders, including Arbenz in Guatemala, Mossadegh in Iran, Allende in Chile, and Lumumba in the Congo. So, when you say we are set in stone against military coups of any kind... Were you announcing a new policy?
Russell, I think the examples you use are interesting. I think when you talked about Iran, you just went back to 1954. President Bush came into office here in 2001, and one of the greatest prides and success stories of American politics has been that in the last 20 years, there has been a wonderful sea change in Central and South America, brought, in large part, as a result of Otto Wright and Elliot Abrams and others, Ronald Reagan, George Bush, who worked very hard to bring democracy to the region. And as a result, there is a difference in the military in those regions. One of the big changes is that the United States military cooperates with militaries in the region, are focused on making sure that they adhere to the rule of law. And there has been dramatic and very helpful change been brought to democracy into the region, and that's why President Bush traveled to El Salvador and to Peru to highlight the importance of democracy. I can't speak to every one of those examples, you say, but there was differences in America's policies in the past, and I think that governments should be given credit when changes are made. Those changes have begun some 20 years ago and were continued by successive administrations, including President Clinton. Next question.
Okay, Ari.
We move to May 21st, 2002.
12:15 p.m. Ari. We need our music, I'm sorry. It just isn't the same. Ari, does Israel have nuclear weapons?
That's a question you'll have to ask Israel.
Do you know, does the administration know, whether they have...
I don't personally know.
Second question. Joschka Fischer, the German foreign minister, is a member of the Green Party in Germany. The Green Party is going to be demonstrating against the president when he goes to Berlin. In today's Times of London, there is a report that says that, quote, President Bush risks sparking a new row with Europe this week when he calls for Europe's support for expanding his war on terror to include the Iraqi regime of Saddam Hussein, end quote. They cite a poll from Der Spiegel, which says that, quote, 65% of Germans believe that the United States is pursuing its own national interests by taking part in or planning wars around the world, end quote. So, the question is, do you agree that the president risks sparking this row with Europe by calling for the overthrow of Hussein?
The president goes in the spirit of Europe being a democracy and Germany being a democracy and the people taking to the streets in peaceful protest. They are doing exactly that which unites us, even if it is a point of contention. That's fundamentally why democracies get along so well. Because we have a way for people to express themselves, even if it is in opposition to the views of the President of the United States. Very often, you hear an overstatement about how serious those issues are. I remember very similar critics saying that when the President, very early in his term, that he would move beyond the ABM Treaty, The same critics said that he would spark a new arms race and lead to a renewal of the Cold War. And in fact, just the opposite has happened. You'll notice that Ari couldn't say that Israel has 250 nuclear weapons, undeclared nuclear weapons. So if the integrity of the United Nations is dependent upon nuclear inspections in Iraq, they might be wanting to do them in Israel as well. Last one, December 5th, 2002.
What was the president thinking when he appointed an alleged war criminal to investigate a war crime? He's gesturing with his hands as if to indicate
he doesn't understand the question.
Land.
But Ari is gesturing with his hand as if he doesn't know what is going on.
What was he thinking?
Who are you thinking of?
Chile, Allende, Cambodia, Kissinger?
Who he appointed?
Kissinger.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Everything that I said when Henry Kissinger was appointed 2 weeks ago about the outstanding integrity of Henry Kissinger and the high regard in which he is held, you should have been here 2 weeks ago. You missed that one.
You have said that Iraq has lied in the past, and it is continuing to lie. Kissinger lied to Congress about Cambodia. Kissinger lied about Chile. How do we know he is not going to lie about his investigation?
If you want to compare what Tariq Aziz said last week to how Henry Kissinger has ably served the United States and continues to ably serve the United States, he is held in very high regard by people in both parties, including the families of 9/11. That's your judgment and your business. The president rejects that line of thinking. Next.
December 9th, 2002. Ari, two questions. Why is the president appointing convicted criminals like Elliot Abrams to policy positions at the White House?
Russell, you asked that question last week.
I did not ask that question last week.
You asked it about somebody else. I dispute the premise of your question.
I have a second question.
I dispute the premise of your second question. Laughter in the press corps.
Yesterday, on Meet the Press, the conservative columnist Bob Dovak said that hawks inside the Bush administration never wanted inspections in Iraq because, quote, this is really about change of regime in Iraq and change of the political outlines in the Middle East more to Israel's benefit. That's what this has all been about, and since it's very hard to sell that to the American people, they have done it on a weapons of mass destruction basis, end quote. Is there anything you can say to counter the public perception that administration hawks like Richard Perl and Paul Wolfowitz have hijacked this country's foreign policy?
The president sets the foreign policy, and the foreign policy is, of course, that inspectors are on the scene and doing their job. Next.
Wow. He's so competent.
At dodging questions. And the way that you do that, if you read that in the newspaper, if you read stuff about Ari Fleischer in the newspaper, the media speak is he stays on point. He always stays on point. He always stays on message. And there you see it. There's you can find these at Common Dreams News Center. This is Ari and I with Russell Mokiber. But you can read the whole gosh darn thing at whitehouse.gov if you want to read the press briefings every day like silly people like me do.
So that was a bit of an extended version, but I think it was because we were just so darn excited to have it here.
Yeah, it's fun. It's really good to do.
So if you want to do a little intro to your interview, I'm just going to get that set up.
Okay.
Excellent.
What we have here is a Guerrilla Radio exclusive from high atop the Guerrilla Radio Media Center at the Dalhousie University sub. We have an interview with William Bloom. William Bloom is somebody who, here on Guerrilla Radio, while we chart the course of the empire, we use a lot of William Bloom, and we use a lot of his 30 years of research. William Bloom, back in 1965, began working for the State Department to build a portfolio to eventually become a Foreign Service officer. And then a little thing called Vietnam happened, and shocked and appalled with what the United States government was doing, he quit his job at the State Department and started an underground journal in Washington, D.C., which he dedicated to active resistance against what was going on in Vietnam, and then turned right away, long before the end of Vietnam, but by the end of the 60s, he turned to exposing CIA misdeeds and ended up being on the cutting edge of exposing the CIA's activities in the early 1970s, which led to a mass mainstream opening up of the CIA, which to that point had been secret and nothing was known about what they were doing. William Bloom has written two books, one called Killing Hope, which is pretty much the most comprehensive history of CIA and U.S. military interventions that you're going to find from 1945 on. The book has some 50 chapters of U.S. interventions. He also wrote a nifty little handbook in 2001 called Rogue State, A Guide to the World's Only Superpower. You can get both those from Common Courage Press. And gave him a phone call on Sunday night, and not from high atop the Guerrilla Radio Media Center, but from the Bower Street Radical House, we conducted an interview with William Bloom. So here it is, Guerrilla Radio exclusive. Well, thanks very much, Mr. Bloom, for joining us. Now, you worked for the State Department until 1967 and then went on to write an expose of the misdeeds of the CIA. I'm just curious what happened to drastically change your direction, to radicalize you in such a way.
Well, a thing called Vietnam happened. I was planning to become a Foreign Service officer. But then Vietnam came along, and I just couldn't take part. I couldn't be someone acting on behalf of the government's policies. So I left my position there before long, and I joined the underground press, as it was called back in the 60s.
Now, on to Iraq. CBS has reported that barely 5 hours after the attacks on Washington and New York, Secretary of State Donald Rumsfeld is quoted in intelligence notes asking whether the information was good enough to hit Saddam at that time. And he's quoted as saying, "Go massive, sweep it all up, things related and not." If it weren't for September 11th, would we be marching to war in Iraq today?
Well, they may have found some other excuse. They have wanted to do this for some time. 9/11 gave them the excuse to do many things. Afghanistan, Iraq, the crackdown on civil liberties at home, and crackdown on the Freedom of Information Act here, all kinds of things at home and abroad. So they would have found some other pretext if it wasn't for 9/11. Even that isn't even a pretext. I mean, at least with Afghanistan on the surface, at least, it could be used as a pretext because there was some connection there, supposedly. With Iraq, there's no connection whatsoever to 9/11, so it's a stretch even for that.
So would you suggest then the war in Afghanistan would have happened at some time or another, regardless of 9/11 then?
It might have, because the U.S. government had been negotiating with the Taliban and not up until 6 months or so before 9/11 to arrange for the safeguarding oil and gas pipelines from the Caspian Sea through Afghanistan and Pakistan into the Indian Ocean. U.S. oil companies were involved in that. And that was not getting as far as the U.S. side wanted it to. And so they were looking for some other way to alter the government's position in Afghanistan. So the motive was always there. Again, they needed the pretext, and this pretext has served many, many functions.
Now, you mentioned that there's no connection whatsoever between Saddam or Iraq and 9/11. Canadian speechwriter for George Bush, David Frum, who's self-proclaimed author of the Axis of Evil concept, says that he came across the idea while reading FDR's reaction to Japan's attack at Pearl Harbor and saying that the larger threat was Nazi Germany, which he then likens Al-Qaeda and 9/11 to the greater threat, which is Iraq. Is there any possible way that this link between Pearl Harbor and the Nazis, Al-Qaeda, and Iraq can be taken seriously?
If you're a speechwriter for George Bush, it can be taken very seriously, yes. I can see from his point of view, it fits in nicely to what he wants to find. I mean, a rational human being would have a hard time finding any credence in all that. A rational human being would ask for some evidence, as the world has been asking for a full year now. We've been asking for evidence of that, and there has not been anything forthcoming. So I don't think by now anybody believes that at all.
Now, Vice President Dick Cheney's energy policy cast it as inevitable that two-thirds of the U.S. oil supply will be imported by 2020. Iraq has the world's second-largest oil reserves. How significant is oil in the conflict in Iraq?
Oh, it's a sine qua non. It's not the only reason, but it's certainly one which has to be there. Without that, the other reasons might not be important enough. The oil has other aspects to it also. I mean, there's the question of the official currency for OPEC, or for oil transactions, has been the dollar. But a year and a half ago or so, Iraq switched to the euro, which apparently upsets the U.S. powers that be greatly. And they're afraid that OPEC may change to the euro officially for the OPEC transactions, and that would be from what I've read in economists' theories, that would be a great blow to the U.S. financially, and it would have to be stopped by the U.S. That's very important for them, and if they were in charge of Iraq, as they have openly admitted is their plan, they could easily switch Iraq's decision, and I think Saudi Arabia and the others would be in a very tenuous position if they wanted to buck the United States on this issue. They would have to go along with keeping the dollar as the official currency.
Now, the Pentagon has recently confirmed that the war plan is entitled Shock and Awe. It involves 3,000 missiles in 48 hours, 800 of them cruise missiles, in order to provide the Hiroshima effect, destroying the enemy's will to fight.
The official currency.
Now, the Pentagon has recently confirmed that the war plan is entitled Shock and Awe. It involves 3,000 missiles in 48 hours, 800 of them cruise missiles, in order to provide the Hiroshima effect, destroying the enemy's will to fight. One Pentagon official called the assault plan unprecedented, but by searching through your table of contents in Killing Hope, do you feel that it's possible that this assessment is in fact true, that this would be an unprecedented attack?
Well, in terms of firepower, I guess it could be. I mean, I don't know exactly how much they're going to use, but they certainly have the means to top what they did in Afghanistan or Iraq earlier, or in Serbia, or Hiroshima. I mean, they have the means to double Hiroshima or do 10 times that, I'm sure. So it's up to them. I can't predict how much they're going to use.
I just mean, I guess, in lieu of the fact of the saturation bombings of Southeast Asia, the fire bombings of Dresden and Tokyo, it seems to be a bit of a stretch to say that any attack of that magnitude would be unprecedented, considering the docket of American atrocities and bombing raids.
Well, I was being technical. I mean, simply in terms of tonnage of bombs or explosive power, however that's measured, you know, it could be unprecedented. But I mean, this is not really an important issue. It's whether it's equal to Hiroshima or twice Hiroshima, it's still going to be total devastation for the people of Iraq. And I think this report was issued as one more way of frightening the people there and frightening the government. It's psychological warfare, and that's probably, at the moment, that's all I can say about it.
And now, on that note, I guess, after the first Gulf War, which you've said was the greatest aerial assault in history.
Up
until that time.
Right? Yeah.
George Herbert Walker Bush said that the specter of Vietnam had been forever buried in the sands of the Arabian Peninsula. What effect has this Vietnam syndrome, the idea of a war carrying on too long, in the face of popular opposition. What role has this played in the expansion of the empire and the altering of its tactics?
Well, one of the main effects of that is in the media. The Pentagon has learned that if you show the American public too many pictures of dead peasants and children, if the pictures are too bloody and too gruesome day after day, you will certainly help to build up antagonism to the war. And so ever since Vietnam, they have slowly but surely limited the media access to the battlefield. It gets less and less with each war. And now it's all staged now. I mean, they'll allow the media to see only what they want them to see. So that's one effect of Vietnam. As far as the length of the war, they bombed Serbia day and night for 78 days. That's a long time. They will bomb until they get a certain effect, either a surrender or total devastation. It can't be predicted how long that'll take. Of course, they would prefer to do it quickly, but not too quickly. They always have a number of experiments to carry out. These wars are done partly to carry out experiments with the newest weapons, and so they have to have the time for that as well. But I don't know how much time they need. They'll take as long as they want. That's the empire does what it wants. You and I can just follow behind and comment about this and that. But the empire will do what it wants.
Well, under that guideline of speed, is this war plan of fighting within the metropolis of Baghdad, which has some 5 million people, is this a potential disaster for the American propaganda effort? Because, I mean, news media would have much greater access to inner city Baghdad than they, as opposed to the highway of death or what have you in the deserts.
Normally what they would do is just bomb the cities until all possible resistance was snuffed out, and then they would send in forces on the ground who would then meet minimal resistance. But they now want to, at the same time, avoid the torching of the oil wells and other things like maybe chemical and biological weapons, which will pollute the air and harm the American soldiers as they were last time. So I've read this plans to do something on the ground even before the bombing has run its course. But who can say when and where that's going to take place or what's going to happen? But it won't be as simple as in the past, because they do have this side objective of wanting to thwart any pollution of the air by Iraq.
Now, on to the United Nations. After the U.S. attacked Grenada in 83, despite overwhelming U.N. disapproval, President Reagan said, 100 nations in the U.N. have not agreed with us on just about everything that's come before them where we're involved, and it didn't upset my breakfast at all. You said that the empire does what it wants. What role does the UN play in that?
Well, even empires, even dictators, everybody wants to be loved. They want to appear to be legitimate. General Pinochet in Chile, he was in power for 17 years as a dictator, but he longed to be loved as well. And he held a referendum certain that he would win, and he lost. And he was forced to leave office. The U.S. empire can do what it wants from a military point of view, but it also wants to appear to be somewhat legitimate. So it uses the U.N. for that purpose, if it can. And it's done pretty well that way in the past. And it's making the attempt now. It was forced to. It's thought that it could go ahead, the empire, that is, thought it could go ahead and do what it wanted in Iraq with UN support and the whole world support, it was surprised by a certain outburst of opposition, so much so that it was forced to play the UN game. And it, so far, it hasn't won that game. What's going to happen will be fascinating to observe, but I can't predict it.